this is our experimental chamber, and the laser is sitting next to the high energy laser pulses are transported from that room to this room. And right now you are seeing the pulses are on one of the fluorescent papers. These are the 800 nanometer pulses, but the paper is getting fluorescent because of that. These pulses are basically as big as 8 centimeters. So you can imagine the scale. This pointer is to say 0.2 mm, around 2 mm, but pulses of our laser pulses are this big. Very energetic laser pulses.
Open kar do.
And now I will show what happens if you focus this pulses onto the target. The shutter is open, there is an off-axis parabola sitting there, and now I am taking you onto the target, which is here, and you will see now that there is something creating here. What is that? That is a very hot dense matter known as a plasma. So this is a plasma plume. Plasma plume, these measurements are basically in air. We use 25 times of the pulses in energy than this, but of course in vacuum. This is just to show you how the plasma plume is created in a lab. Further zoom in, and as we create such condition, how do we measure such condition will be the basic theme of my talk as I move ahead in my talk. So you can see that this looks like a chopper, and shock waves are generated, and that is the reason of this loud noise. Of course, you don't have such a noise when do you experiments in a vacuum chamber. So today I will be talking about how we catch this hot dense matter, basically a plasma which has a very hot initially and gets cold as the time progresses. So when I say time, what are these time scales? This time scale is basically ultra fast time scale. Ultra fast here means starting from femtoseconds to tens to hundreds of picosecond or sub picosecond. So this is the scene of action which I have showed you just now, when a laser of very high energy laser gets focused onto the plasma. It creates a laser intensity which is greater than 10 to the 18 to 10 to the 19 watt per centimeter square, and as soon as they get focused, there is a generation of hot dense plasma, thereby immediate setup of a relativistic current, relativistic electrons will start moving inside a target, carrying the laser energy deep into the target, ionizing the bulk of the target, thereby immediate forward and return currents are set up, which in turns give you the ultra high magnetic fields, ultra high current density. This plasma itself is a source of several emissions, starting from X-rays, gamma rays to terahertz to several harmonics which gets generated. Also you have relativistic electron, protons, and all the sort of things, all the sorts of emission you can think of. So as I talk about, this plasma is hot, temperature is as high as 10 to hundreds of EV, quite dense. We already see how violent and how turbulent it can be. It's not static, it's rapidly evolving, and it's evolving at the speed of 10 to the 6 centimeter per second. Highly emissive, as I just described you. So suppose you want to have a particular information from such plasma, and the selective measurements can be issues because of the so many other noises present in such kind of an hot dense matter. So just to start with, I will start with what is a snapshot of work done in last 5 years where I have majorly contributed. After commissioning of this 100 terawatt laser, I am basically involved in maintaining, operating it, and upgrading of several parts of it. Thereafter, we have developed this pulse compressor, and there the laser energy gets passed on these beam lines to the experimental chamber. A few years before, we have generated the third harmonic, which we use as a tool for measuring several dynamics like a Doppler shift, which tells us how the plasma moves like a mirror. Also, we have measuring the megagauss magnetic fields on a tabletop. Very recently, we have found out, we have answered a very basic question, that how long these fast electrons basically stay inside a target. And as we are doing these measurements in femtosecond, picosecond scale, how about doing a femtosecond interaction but probing it a nanosecond delays? So we have recently developed something known as a cavity delay line, which I will talk at the end of my talk. So as Satya pointed out, Ravi has given a Wednesday colloquium where he has talked about how the magnetic fields are generated and how they are turbulent. provided he has showed you the several images which are basically finally measured. But today I will show you how we use such ultra fast femtosecond picosecond time scale, provided there is a turbulent and noisy environment, and also how do we do measurements when this plasma is rapidly evolving. So in today's my talk, I will only talk about techniques, and also I will talk about what are the observable of such high dense plasma. Also I will talk about why, what are the areas our group is famous for. I mainly concentrate on three very important measurements here. First is magnetic field, of course, the life of hot electrons, how we are planning to probe it to the nanoseconds. So as I told you, the basic question I want to hear addressed today is how do we do such measurements. The answer to this question lies here, that we use intense pulses. These pulses are basically first to create a hot dense plasma, and another weak pulses which basically interrogates this plasma as per our wish, and this is very famously something known as a pump probe technique, and we here say that we basically exploit the power of pump probe technique in our lab. So how do we pump the plasma? As I have told, intense pulses focus on to the laser, there is generation of plasma, and there these are the all the properties of the plasma. So the very very major part of the pulses are used to create a plasma. So we call those pulses as a pump pulses. Also we use a weak pulses, which is basically derived from the main laser itself. They go interact with either a cold target or a plasma generated there, gets reflected from that plasma, and then we interrogate what has happened to these reflected pulses. So we call this the probing this plasma.
Sorry, the previous transparency, you had given this plasma velocity, mm-hmm. 10^6 to 10^7 centimeters per second.
Yes.
What do you mean? You have a solid target, isn't it?
Yes, we have a solid target, but as soon as you generate a plasma, plasma is not a static thing.
But
it starts.
Electrons have a bigger velocity.
So it's very rapidly starts moving towards the vacuum, and the speed of that motion is of the order of 10^6. As I told you, they are.
I think we can discuss it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Basically, these measurements are also done in our lab by looking at the Doppler shift reflectivity, which I can show you.
Another question.
Correct.
Then there will be a deceleration.
Yes.
That's why what exactly you discussed.
Yes, okay. Okay, basically we use solid targets starting from metal blocks or glass, or sometimes aluminium coated glass. So those are basically I will explain as I move forward. So as I told you, that we can use such weak pulses. There are basic advantages of using the weak pulses, that it just touches the plasma and grows back, and also these properties of these probe pulses are under our control, and of course they are time separated, time delayed as per our wish. After the reflection, we feed these probe to several diagnostics depending upon what kind of measurements we are looking for. So as I told you, we are looking at a very ultra fast time scale, where the electronics basically limits to do it because of its resolution, which has hundreds of picoseconds, and these probe properties are in our control. So we give it is a technology, we call it as WYGIWYG. So what you get is what you give is we call to this pump probe technique, basically probe reflected from the plasma. Also, as these measurements are done in vacuum, we cannot touch anything there. Our chamber is as big as 1.2 meters. So we have to control all these properties from outside the target, and that is one of the biggest challenge which we use. Another one of the advantages of using probe is that as these measurements are done quite away from the target, and if there is some noise by another because of several emissions, this noise basically isotropically fall by 1 by r square, and then you will be very sure that you are looking at a only particular signal of your wish. So basic question is, where this pulses reflected from which part of this pulses will reflect from? As I showed you, the as soon as there is a generation of plasma here, it starts expanding towards the vacuum. And suppose now you are coming with a probe having a frequency omega, it start going deeper and deeper, and it goes deeper till its frequency matches with a frequency of a plasma. So after that, it basically reflects from there, and we call this layer as a critical layer. Below this, it's under dense for the probe, and up, and inside this, it's over dense for the probe. So suppose now instead of omega, you are coming with a different harmonics of the probe, you can go deeper and deeper into the plasma. For example, suppose I am coming with a 400 nanometer, I can go as high as 4 NC of that of the 800 nanometer. And suppose I have a 266, which is the third omega, I can go even deeper to the plasma, which we call as near solid densities. So we can probe till near solid density inside the plasma. So this is a workhorse of our all the experiment. This is our 100 terawatt laser, which we installed in 2011, and we are started using to its full power in 2013. From that time, today we are basically flogging out on this laser. We are using a maximum time, and we are doing so many experiment. I have talked on this about my asset in 2013, so I am not going today to talk about the laser, but I will today talk about the measurements we have done. Till to give you the idea, there are several amplification stages, and every pass laser is get amplified, and at the finally you will get 800 nanometer pulses of 25 femtosecond, 2.5 joule in each pulse, and the repetition rate of this laser is as high as 10 hertz. So after the final amplifier, these pulses travel completely through the vacuum, and there they get compressed. So it spends around 10 meters of a travel in this probe compressor, and thereafter it travel something around 10 meters till it come to our experimental chamber. So total travel is all of the order of 20 meters. As I have showed you in my earlier movie, that our pulses are as big as 8 centimeter, what we need is to have a very big optics, and the typical size of our optics is 5 inch mirrors, because also we have to take care of its energy density and power density on that, and therefore we have to have a very clean surfaces of this mirror to avoid any kind of damages on this mirror. So as we are traveling so much, there can be always question about beam drifts. So to avoid beam drifts, we always monitor a location of a beam at different position in laser. Also, if there are any small drifts which can be corrected in our experimental chamber as well as in a compressor chamber, because we have so many mirror mounts on which can be controllable from outside. So very small drifts can be avoided. This is, we need to avoid that, because finally we are going to focus these beams to 10 microns, and we can't afford any kind of jitter during that 10 micron thing. So this is the experimental chamber. As I have showed you earlier, probes pulses are coming there, and my pump pulses are getting focused at the center of this target. There are several ports available here which are basically looking at the target chamber, and in principle you can put a several diagnostic looking at the interaction point. So this is the inside the chamber. Now I will show you how we basically generate pump pulses and probe pulses from our laser pulse. Look at here is a beam splitter which basically allow to transmit 92% of the beam, and we use them as a pump pulses, but 8% of the pulses goes out of this chamber, and we use, they are weak, and we manipulate them to use as a probe pulses. So this is how it comes here, gets focused by this off axis parabola on this target. This target is basically on XYZ control, can be optimized from outside, and after every laser shot we go on to the fresh target. Now I will take you to the probe site. So it probe pulses come outside the chamber and they pass to the several they take several turns, and here is a BBO, which is a second order, which is a non-linear crystal. It converts omega into 2 omega, and then we send the pulses back inside the chamber. As you must have wondered how we provide a delay to this probe, we basically have something known as a retro reflector on the stage. This retro reflector moves in space. As it moves in space, we either add or we subtract the delays. We either come before the main interaction pulse, or we can come after the main interaction pulse. So as now these pulses, now they are going inside the chamber, they go inside, they basically gets reflected from either a cold target, or if there is a presence of a plasma, it reflects from the plasma, and then it goes completely out where we put a diagnostic outside the experimental chamber. So this is the whole scenario. As I have told you that there is a retro reflector, this retro reflector is put on a high precision stage, and the least count of this as small as 1 micron. After the beam slitter, both of the pump pulses as well as probe pulses has basically taken a 3 meter long path before they come back and again meet on the target. So point here I want to make is that for us the every shot is an experiment. How? We basically divide into two, one goes as a pump, another goes as a probe. They come on the target, they create a plasma, get reflected from there. Every time we moved a target as a function of for every shot, this gives us the information about the depth, because probe pulses can go much deeper. They give, if you are doing a CCD kind of measurement, this gives us information about in imaging mode X and Y scale on the target, and also it gives us the information about time. So many information are embedded when the probe is reflected from the plasma. So this is how we generated the second harmonic. I have showed you, we use a BBO to generate omega to 2 omega, and then we filter it out using a appropriate filter. We have also generated 3 omega using 2 BBOs at correct cut and correct orientation, so that omega and 2 omega gets add up to 3 omega, and here you can have omega 2 omega 3 omega together. You can use appropriate filter to only filter out 3 omega pulses. From here we don't get because only omega and 2 omega add up to give 3 omega.
The 2 omega by itself can give you 4.
No, because these crystals are not specifically cut for 4 omega. So we right now we are only getting 3 omega pulses out of this. So if you don't use a filter there, which is an interference filter, what you can in principle together have is all these wavelengths coming together. And as I told you that there are several advantages of using higher harmonics. First, you can basically completely reduce the pump noise in front of your detectors. Also, the probe helps you to access deeper into the plasma, as deep as a near solid density. So this is the simple, this is the pump probe experiment. As I have told you that we have the pump of the focal spot of 17 micron. We need to match it spatially. Our probe are 60 micron, almost 3 times bigger than that. But before doing any experiment, we have to match this pump and probe pulses first in space and second in time. So how do we do it? And what are the challenges here? Here the challenges are, they are extremely small, and we have to do everything under a vacuum chamber. We cannot touch anything. We have to manipulate everything from the outside. The laser is basically travel quite far after the final amplifier, as far as 20 meters. Every shot here is a complete experiment, so we cannot miss them, we cannot have them spatially mismatch. And also we have to match them very accurately over a 10 micron, and very 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 small jitter in a space have to be corrected every time. We have to ensure that they are matched at every shot, otherwise you will lose the complete information. So how do we do it? We have a target here, and here is a some extender in which one of the CCD camera is sitting. So this is our one of the CCD camera. It's continuously looking at the target, and now I will show you how do we do this matching. This matching technique is known as burn and match. I will show you by playing this video. So my probe pulses are coming, burning the target, and then I will give a shot with pump pulse. They are specially right now mismatched. Now I am moving my probe pulses. I have a control from outside. I move, I keep going it till I go to the debris created by this. I say now this is roughly matched. Now I need to check that. I go to fresh location, probe comes, pump pulse, yes, beautifully matched. And then we raster the target for the kind of an experiment we want to do. And here again, every shot gives us, and every shot is an experiment for us. Also, for the time match, you have seen that there are our pump pulses is 25 femtosecond, but our probe pulses are 80 femtosecond. Then they need to be matched in time. In time, 25 femtosecond corresponds to 9 micron and 80 femtosecond corresponds to 27 micron. You need to match them, say, in the order of 27 micron. I have showed you this retro reflector sitting outside the chamber, which we move to and fro, having a resolution of 1 micron, and by which we can basically temporally match these pulses. But what is the signature we are looking for? We are looking for its reflectivity. So here is my polished BK7 glass target. My pump probe pulses are coming ahead, getting reflected from the cold target. So probe coming ahead reflects only from the glass. So in the reflectivity, you will see only 4% reflection coming from the glass. Again, my probe pulses are now slightly before the pump pulses, no generation of plasma yet. Now they are coming together. This is where the probe will get slightly reflected from, partly reflected from the plasma. But when the probe pulses comes later than the plasma, they get basically reflected from the plasma here. And now if you see in a reflectivity, as soon as there is a generation of plasma, this plasma basically acts as a mirror and the reflectivity of the pumps shoot up. So as soon as the reflectivity of pump shoot up, we know that before that it is time t is equal to 0, that where they must have roughly matched. Probe is basically roughly matched in time.
Is it a slightly circular argument?
Sorry?
You are saying that you know this basically from the reflectivity.
Yes.
There could be a delayed effect in the plasma generation. So, how do you know that it is exactly t equal to 0? You know that the reflectivity is maximal at this
stage. Okay. Yeah, exactly. So, what we look at is not at the maximum. We look at where it start picking up. So that time we can say that they must have come together.
You could say that the plasma is becoming visible to the probe.
This is basically now the glass has become much more metallic. So these pulses are basically now getting reflected from the plasma. So the metallicity has just started.
I'm trying to ask whether this is actually a time of coincidence or it's a measure only of the reflectivity.
So it's only measure of the reflectivity, but where the time where the reflectivity is just starting to shoot up.
So no, what is the step size? Step size is 7 femtosecond.
Yes, step size can be as close to our pulse width, because our pulse width can be 30 to 80 femtoseconds. So that is your resolution. So we can see up to that resolution. Before that, it's difficult. Before that, you can't, there may be some jitters, which is not avoidable.
So if you tag something as zero.
Correct, I will show you in my further slide where we have done a high resolution scan, where you can basically see this time matching within a resolution of 100 femtoseconds.
No, I think Krishnan's question was about, the moment the pulse falls, is the plasma instantaneous or is there a delay?
No, I think that plasma is instantaneous. Plasma is instantaneous, and we are
on what time scale is
it? Exactly, and we are not hitting at the same place, we are going to the new location, so that if probe are reflecting, either they are reflecting from the plasma or they are reflecting from the glass, but the reflectivity is the measure. As I have told you that multi-wavelengths can be used, and I will again show you the reflectivity done by this all the three wavelengths together. This is an experimental setup. It's come, but I am coming with all the three wavelengths now, and it's getting reflected from a target or a plasma, and we use a grating to separate them in wavelengths. So they get separated in their wavelengths, and we put three different detectors to measure them in a single shot. So this is a much more clear high resolution run, where you can see now the plasma has become a metallic here, and here you can basically nicely give the resolution in 100 femtosecond. You can say that where your pump and probe pulses may have come together. So thereafter you can see that the plasma, basically once it's set up, initially it's basically a metallic, but thereafter it starts absorbing the probe, so your reflectivity again goes down. So from this point onward, I will show you how we have done the Mach field. So now my probe pulses and pump pulses are matched in space, they are matched in time, but as soon as there is a plasma formation, as relativistic electrons move forward, there is a forward as well as return current, which basically generates the azimuthal field. Till that, the highest magnetic field measure, which is a record, which is 100 megagauss at 10 to the power 20 watt per centimeter square. The experiments are done at Rutherford Appleton Laboratory, UK, not by us. But what are the ways by which we can measure the magnetic field? Of course, we can use a proximity sensor like Hall probe or coils, but they are limited by their spatial resolution as well as their temporal resolution. Another important thing is that, as we know, that the laser produced plasma have a high temperature in very tiny spot, and also they have a high pressure. Your proximity sensor basically can completely get destroyed. Then you have to use a non-contact way, which we are using is ultrafast dynamics. Again, in ultrafast dynamic, you need a picosecond temporal resolution to map them. In non-contact way, as if I'm going with a vertical polarized light to the plasma there, what this does, because of the magnetic field generated, self-induced magnetic field generated there, my probe gets elliptically polarized, and this is famous, known as a Cotton-Morton effect, and we can see the polarization changes. So my vertically polarized light basically gets converted into ellipse, and if I can measure the major and minor axis of this ellipse, I can get the complete information of this ellipse, and thereby I can know what kind of magnetic field should have been there to generate this kind of rotation. Optics gives us the answer how to measure this ellipse. We can use two different polarizer, one looking at a P parallel at kept at 0 degree, another at cross which is kept at 90 degree, and from that you can calculate the ellipticity. So these are two polarizers which we have used, one at 0 degree, one at 90 degree, and we are measuring the probe polarized probe reflected from the plasma itself, and we are measurizing ellipse here using a CCD. This CCD has a quantum efficiency greater than 60% for both 400 nanometer as well as 266 nanometer wavelengths. Once we know the okay.
Mm-hmm. If it were a steady state, this is okay.
Mm-hmm.
Since you are having a femtosecond laser,
mm-hmm.
and the plasma,
mm-hmm.
it will be a dynamical system rather than static.
Yes.
Does it still hold good fully?
Yes, it still holds good, because we have seen the we know that our vertical polarization, what's a kind of extension it has, but when we measure the reflection from the plasma, it actually gains an ellipticity, which is a 10 times more than that is that of the extension of my system. So we know that it has become a polarized an ellipse, and of course it's random because of the so many.
If there's a steady state magnetic field, you'll see a constant rotation.
Yes.
Or ellipticity.
Yes.
But yours is a highly evolving plasma, so
yes,
how reliable is it? So what's your time uncertainty or your reliance on how fast, how much confidence you put on?
Measuring an average.
Yeah. Average over at the particular time delay, whatever is evolved up to a certain time delay.
But and there will be the other problems too, because the time varying thing is equivalent
to. No, but time varying we are taking care of, because we are going.
We are measuring with time till it as it is evolved till up to a certain time, and then of course the measurement is instantaneous in that sense.
Yes, we have the independent measure of density. Yeah, because anyway we know how deep we are going into the plasma, so.
Interferometry.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, exactly.
The thing is, you have a Faraday rotation, B to be any. This is fine when you look at your refractive index, etc., and then normal steady state. In this case, you have a faster time varying. And then the thing is, if you were to look at the same propagation with all the effects, and then try to get to it.
Yeah. So people have modeled it, they have done simulations, so reasonably. Well, whatever average it is.
Yeah. Also, these measurements are done many, many times, and many, many times the data has been seen and averaged out. So, what we are looking into the polarigrams, because now in the imaging mode we have seen we are using the CCD, so we get a megapixel of an image. Once we know that the magnetic field is generated once we know the information about the ellipticity, we can back calculate using Helmholtz equation what kind of magneticity will be there, and we have developed a code here which is known as ELL to MF code, and this code is basically we have made it open source, and people like in GIST and RAL are also using this code. So every time we are guessing a magnetic field, and we are solving it iteratively to get our ellipticity solution is equal to ellipticity measure. So as I told you, we are looking at ellipticity map, which is basically at a particular time delay as we vary the delay, and this is a megapixel information, megapixel ellipticity image. So we have to calculate magnetic field for all of them, every pixel in the CCD. There are some zeros, because this is our probe size, which is 60 micron. Out of this, there are zeros. So anyway, still we have to calculate a magnetic field for 7 × 10⁵ data point. So for 2 picosecond, we required 1 second for calculation of one pixel of data, but suppose you have to calculate 7 × 5 data points, you have required almost 7 to 10 days. Initially we have written the code in the MATLAB, but then we converted into Fortran just to save a RAM and just to save a time. Still it reduces to 3 to 4 days, but thereafter, as we know, the ellipticity can only vary from 0 to 1, and then we divide it into 1000 steps. And we have basically written a ellipticity matrix, which is ellipticity versus magnetic field. We have written a new subroutine which finds the ellipticity and replaced with this corresponding magnetic field. So time has reduced. For 1 picosecond it takes around 1 hour, and for up to 50 picosecond it takes around 1 day to calculate these images. So once you have the run, you can get a complete information about a magnetic field in 1 day. So this is, I'm coming to the data. This is here I have the magnetic field with 2 omega, this is magnetic field with 3 omega. Here I am wearing the probe delay, And the scale here is up to 100 megagauss and here up to 120 megagauss. As I move in time, the magnetic field increases. It goes as high as 100 megagauss at certain peaks. There are peaks and valleys. This is completely filamentary, completely random, completely turbulent. And as time passes out, it again goes relaxed and goes to some saturation values. So this is a complete information of 2 omega as well as 3 omega. Complete picture has been shown here, and we can now say that we have seen a temporal, spatial, 3D, basically 3D maps of magnetic field at near solid density, and also we have captured electron filamentation on a sense. So till now I have shown you how we have used a WYGIWYG, that is what you give is what you get, but how about doing a measurements like measuring a self emissions coming from such plasma, which is at the target rear. For example, suppose you want to know a relative, as you know, the relativistic electrons pass through the target. As you recall the scene of action, as they pass through the target, these relativistic electrons can basically give rise to a Cherenkov emission. So suppose you want to know the lifetime of this relativistic electrons inside a target, then you need, and you can find the lifetime of this Cherenkov emission inside a target, you can talk about how long the fast electrons survive within a bulk. As the Cherenkov radiation is basically observed once again when the velocity of fast electron is greater than the velocity of light in that particular medium, the Cherenkov emission is measured. In this case, we are using aluminium coated BK7 glass, and for BK7 glass, if the electron is traveling greater than 2 into 10 to the 8 meter per second, it will emit a Cherenkov emission. So, but what are the problems here? As we are looking at the rear side of the target, the Cherenkov emission don't come alone, it comes with several other emission like a plasma emission. Plasma emission is extremely strong at the rear side of the target. Also, the Cherenkov emission is very weak. Suppose I have interaction laser, say has a unit 1, the Cherenkov emission is as small as 10 to the power minus 11 unit. So you have to first basically see where the Cherenkov emission is coming, and actually are you looking at a Cherenkov emission. So how to catch a Cherenkov emission? So you cannot basically distinguish Cherenkov emission and plasma emission in frequency, because they both come in visible frequency. Cherenkov, as we have seen, it's weak, whereas other optical emission are strong, but the time profile of Cherenkov emission as and plasma are our saviors. Because the Cherenkov emission is generated due to the fast electrons, due to the relativistic electron, they travel with the speed of light and you can find them very closer to the laser pulse. Whereas plasma emission comes much later and lives much longer. So they live as long as hundreds of nanoseconds, but till now we don't know what is the lifetime of this Cherenkov emission. So what you have to use is you have to use ICCD. ICCD help you in a two ways. First, it will intensify your Cherenkov signal. Another thing is they will provide you a gate, a time window from which you can, 5 nanosecond time window, which you can move as per your wish. So how do we do it? We basically set this 5 nanosecond window by only to see a Cherenkov emission. And there are other scatters of the laser which you can get rid of using, you get filter it out using a BG39 bandpass kind of a filter, and finally you only remain with a Cherenkov emission image. But still the ICCD cannot give you the information about a Cherenkov emission, because it has a resolution in time, basically electronics driven, is 200 picoseconds. So what do? Because if you move one step left to this, you may completely miss the Cherenkov emission, as well as you will completely miss the laser. So what do? You have to use another technique, which is known as a gate within a gate. You have to come a gate within a ICCD gate, which has a resolution much smaller than 200 picoseconds. So we have decided to use and optical gate known as a optical Kirk gate. This gate has a 2 picosecond gate width. So, we have now coupled it within the electronically gated ICCD1, and hence we can now basically see how long this Cherenkov emission can live for. So, this is optical Kirk gate technique, which is well established. Your signal is coming in this way, and it is basically nullified using two polarizers crossed with each other. In between you have something known as a Kerr medium. The Kerr medium will be only active if you are pumping it with a gigawatt per centimeter square intensity. So, if you comes with another pulses, there will be a birefringence created here, and then basically it rotates the polarization. So, your emission signal can pass through the second polarizer, and you can detect a light. So, we have established this technique for CS2, its CS2, the gate width is as small as 2 picosecond, and then we have incorporated this gate within our ICCD window gate. So, how we do it? We again Cherenkov or other emission is coming from here going to ICCD. We have put two polarizers crossed with each other, there is a Kerr medium in between, and now we are coming with a Kerr pump laser which time can be controlled as per our wish, and having a total time window of 2 picoseconds. So, here is a complete experimental setup in one shot. Here I want to point out to that earlier we have matched pump and probe on the target, but now we are matching the emission coming from the target to the Kerr set, and another laser derived basically from the main laser acting as a Kerr gate pump, and they are arriving on the Kerr set at the same time. We basically delay this Kerr pump so that we get the complete information of the Cherenkov emission within our ICCD window. So, the answer here is ICCD gate basically helps you to get rid of the plasma emission. But no, you may not, because if you don't have an ICCD and if you have just a normal CCD, and if you use this 2 picosecond gate width, this can be scanned anywhere and you don't know where your Cherenkov emission is. You can even go to the plasma region and scan that. You don't know which is the Cherenkov emission. But as I showed you, my Kerr gate pulses are only creating a gate for 2 picosecond, but my emission, which is a long live. No, Kerr gate, of course it's not 100% emission, but so Kerr gate, I will say it's around 60 to 70% efficient, but still you have the long lived plasma emission which you have to kill because of with the help of ICCD. Then as I have told you, ICCD is used to get rid of the plasma emission, and the BG39 filter to get off any scatter radiation. What you leave with only a Cherenkov emission. And then we use another gate, which is a Kerr gate, within this gate, which we scan fully, and then we get a complete information of an Cherenkov emission, which basically lasts as long as hundreds of picoseconds. Every time we have measured the images, and basically my first Cherenkov emission, which was integrated in time, as gets sliced now in 2 picosecond window, and you can see that we have measured it from minus 20 picosecond all the way up to 120 picosecond, and you still get signal up to 110 picosecond. So when you integrate and plot them together, what you leave up with, that this is an integrated curve, you can see that now the Cherenkov emission lasts as long as 110 picosecond. That way you can now infer that your path electron must be present inside a bulk target as long as hundreds of picoseconds. So till now I have showed you femtosecond experiment with picosecond delay, but how about femtosecond experiment with nanosecond delay? So how about a story after your main pulse has gone and has gone far away, and you want to measure, do a measurement which is 100 nanoseconds up away from the main pulse. So I have showed you that we can use this delay line, but for 100 nanoseconds you have to move this delay line 15 meter long, which is in principle very difficult. Why it is difficult? Because laser bit itself will have some beam diversion, and also our lab space like TIFR may not available, there may not be even 1 feet available, forget about 15 meters. So the solution is, how about tracking these pulses for a long time and exit them as per your wish. So you can in principle use a cavity delay line, you are basically trapping them as per your wish. It basically preserves the shape of the beam without the divergence because of the special optics used inside the cavity, and also you can have nanosecond delay as per your wish. You can go hundreds of nanoseconds without any issue. So this is our cavity delay line setup. I want to look at two very important parts of it. One is the focal cells, another one is a polarizer here. So how does this focal cell work? This focal cell is basically an electro-optic, optical switch. It will be turned on when it has a high voltage. If you are coming with a vertically polarized light and you have a focal cell here, you at the end of it, when you apply high voltage, at the end of it you will get a polarization rotated by a 45 degree. This is something known as a quarter wavelength. Now suppose you have a mirror sitting here. So first your vertically polarized beam gets rotated by 45 degree, again it gets passed through the mirror, again it comes to the focal cell, high voltage is still on, and it will again get rotated by 45 degrees. So whatever what you have, that your vertically polarized light basically gets completely rotated to a horizontal polarized light. Another important component here is a polarizer. This is a polarizer which is a wedge polarizer in principle. So this polarization, very important point to be noted, that this polarizer reflects the vertical polarization and it transmits the horizontal polarization. So how do we use this concept of an cavity mirror? How do we basically trap these pulses, and how do we basically extract these pulses as per our wish? So vertical polarization is shown vertically and this is horizontally. Remember, these are my polarizers, and remember they are basically reflecting a vertical polarization light. So I am coming with vertically polarized light, so they get reflected from both of these polarizers, go to mirrors, go to a focal cell. This focal cell is known as a seed voltage. Initially voltage was off, seed focal cell, initially voltage was off, I turned it on, it's rotated by 45 degree, again comes to the focal cell, rotated by another 45 degree, vertical becomes horizontal now, and now they keep moving in this cavity. Here my another focal, and again so they start moving inside this cavity. Again, to point, remember here is that this is my another focal cell. The voltage of this focal cell is off, and now these pulses are permanently trapped inside this cavity now, till I decided to extract these pulses. How do I extract these pulses? Simple, I turn on the high voltage here, and then it's rotated, horizontal gets rotated to vertical back, and then gets now reflected from the polarizer sitting here. So with this geometry, we can basically produce, depending upon how many number of round trips it takes inside the cavity, we can delay it starting from 5 nanoseconds to all the way up to 100 nanoseconds. So in future, our plan is to develop an independent probe line where we want to use a femtosecond pulses. Basically, instead of having a putting a beam splitter in femtosecond pulses, we take a picosecond pulses before the compressor, we can use our cavity delay line. So our main, remember our main pump is femtosecond, but our probe will be now picosecond. So this probe, picosecond probe at nanosecond delay, or you can use another probe pulse compressor by which you can get compress these pulses back, and you can also have femtosecond interaction but at nanosecond delay. So you need to develop these probe pulses, which we have done recently in our lab. We have also set up a probe compressor which basically compresses 200 picosecond pulses to 300 femtosecond, and 200 picosecond to 30 femtosecond, and now we can use these pulses as to our wish. So with this I will finish my talk. In summary, we have shown you how the plasma acts like a mirror, how we do pump probe measurement and get the information of the magnetic field in all three dimensions, how we have used these pulses to find out the lifetime of the fast electron inside the bulk medium, and also I will show you how we are doing a future experiment where we are planning to use femtosecond pulses interaction and a nanosecond time delay. So I thank to all of my group. There are several present and past students present here with some lab members, other lab members. I also thankful to the collaborators. All of them basically help us in all the way, like doing a several simulation as well as providing different targets for the experiment. So I will say this is just a beginning. We want to do a magnetic field measurement at the rear side of a target, where we basically want to study the how the transport mechanism is taking place. Very recently, rather in this week, we have generated a super quantinum beam. We could make a collimated super quantinum probe beam, so which can be used for the several measurements in this plasma. Also, we will show you the femtosecond, picosecond, nanosecond experiment. We are planning to upgrade our laser from 100 to 150 terawatt. Also, there will be some challenging experiment in Hyderabad if we will have a petabyte facility soon. So, and thereby, I finished my talk with ultra speed, saying that thank you all of you, and of course your ideas. That's not the case, but the problem here is once you get them, you don't know what are you looking at. Are you looking at plasma emission or you are looking at Cherenkov emission? You are clueless about that. But now we know that this stays for 200 picoseconds. Earlier we don't know about this, but now we know. Another answer to this question is as this Cherenkov emission are extremely weak, you can't just simply see it with the help of a CCD. You need an intensifier to see that. So that's why we have to use ICCD, so that we see that window and completely intensify that area. Otherwise it's not possible without any other. Correct. ICCD is part of the bigger window with intensifier. Principal Cherenkov is, as we all know, is radially polarized. So suppose you use an analyzer which is a polarizer, and you rotate it throughout 360 degrees, you should see a constant magnitude of this Cherenkov. radiation. So this is one of the way by which you know that this is Cherenkov coming from the plasma. Another thing, yes, we have done this. Another thing is, you know that only from the time that they are very close to the laser itself. So time is one of the savior by which you know that this is a Cherenkov. Okay, yeah, exactly. So basically Cherenkov emission emits as a cone. Yeah, it emits as a cone. So higher energy electrons goes outside and lower inside. So it emits as basically a cone. But plasma emission is all over. You can also see it in a CCD. So when we are seeing this images, it's just of order of hundreds of 200 micrometers, but plasma emission can be
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
So I hope you liked it.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. Thank you very much.